It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Most people avoid publicizing their political opinions, but Sean King makes a living off of his. The New York Daily News columnist writes almost daily, two articles a day, I've heard, about presidential politics and all kinds of other subjects. He often wears his political affiliation right there on his sleeve. But he's a lifelong Democrat, and he's made a decision to soon sever ties with that party. Sean King's based in Atlanta and joins me now in our studio. Welcome.
Yeah, good to see you.
It is still correct that you plan to leave the Democratic Party after the November election?
Yeah, I do. You know, I feel like, and it really hurts me to say this, my mother's a lifelong Democrat, and I really learned about the Democratic Party from my mother. She's worked in a light bulb factory in Kentucky for the past 45 years, and she voted for Bernie Sanders as well, and she was a huge Clinton supporter and really kind of sold me on the Clintons as a teenager. I grew up in rural Kentucky, and she believed that Bill Clinton was a supporter of working class people, and here she was working in this factory, and so it made a lot of sense for her. Like she identified with Bill's kind of story of coming up rough, of struggling to get where he was. And I think she's experienced what a lot of working class people, particularly factory workers and others, have experienced, not only during Bill Clinton's presidency, but over the last 20 years of her career there in the factory. All of her benefits eroded, her pension and other things were taken away. And so here she is now, a retired woman, kind of struggling to make it from month to month. And she was surprised because, you know, here she is. My mother is a very independent woman, and she decided to support Bernie Sanders because she felt like he was for the things that she cared about.
Let's actually hear a little bit of President Bill Clinton talking from this very era that you were speaking of. This is 1996. He spoke at the University of Kentucky for his reelection bid.
I was there.
Oh, yeah. Here he is that year. This is another campaign event in Louisville.
I believe that we've got an obligation to work together to help each other make the most of our own lives. I believe that the First Lady was right when she said, it takes a village to raise our children and to build a country. And what you have to decide is whether you think we have to do this together or whether we're better off going into the 21st century on our own.
Sean, isn't this what politics is, though? Is true of every political candidate and every political party that when they get into office, the promises they made during their campaign often aren't fulfilled and that political expediency takes over?
Well, I think there's definitely some truth to that, Celeste. But what I've learned now, I was a teenager when he gave that speech, and what I've learned now is that not only did Bill and the Democratic Party, not only have they consistently kind of overpromised and underdelivered, I don't really even believe that they believe a lot of the things that they're saying. Like, just last night, I shared a video about how Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's the head of the DNC, that she's received huge amounts of money from payday loan companies, and she's introduced, you know, legislation supporting payday lenders. And so in the communities that I fight for and care about, they are struggling with these payday loan companies, and people are in deep debt. They charge sometimes over 300% interest. And to find that not only, it's not just Debbie Wasserman Schultz, but a lot of the Democratic congressmen that I loved and respected, like Alcee Hastings and Gregory Meeks, these are members of the Congressional Black Caucus, have received hundreds of thousands of dollars from these payday loan companies to make sure that legislation never comes up to kind of curb their influence. And so I'm against the death penalty, and Hillary Clinton is for the death penalty. I'm against these payday loan companies. I'm against, in so many ways, I'm against unnecessary war. And the Democratic Party can no longer clearly say, hey, we're an anti-war party.
Hillary Clinton voted for the Iraq War. But to a certain extent, the party that you that you're describing, that you would be a member of, doesn't exist.
Right.
And Bernie Sanders is an independent, which is one of the problems that many people had for him, is he's running as a Democrat, but he legislates as an independent. So where do you go? If your party doesn't exist, where do you go if you leave the Democrats?
Right. I think that's the dilemma, and that's what's so frustrating. And I think the fact that Bernie Sanders has won 21 primaries and caucuses, has kind of shocked the soul of the Democratic Party. I mean, not one governor in any of those states endorsed him. Not one U.S. senator in any of those states endorsed him. And so in spite of the entire Democratic machine being against him, he continued to win state after state after state. And even now he is competitive in California because a lot of people just like me look not just at Hillary Clinton, but look at the Democratic Party and they're frustrated. And we see Bernie currently as our only option to express that frustration. But for me, I'm no longer willing to play the game. I should be able to support candidates who believe what I believe, who support what I support, and I should not have to hold my nose and vote. And so for me, I'm just done playing that game.
Okay. There's a name that has not come up yet, and it's an important name. So let's hear a bit of you speaking to NPR. This is in 2008. It was the night that Barack Obama won the presidency. And here you are reacting to that news.
Yeah.
I'm great. I'm excited. I'm on cloud nine, really. My wife is about 6.5 months pregnant, and we have some little ones. And so we decided to go very low key, and we're still here in the house. And so we turned down a couple party invitations and made it private, but that allowed me to kind of let my guard down and cry a little bit. Barack Obama didn't just do this on his own, and he knows that. He really stands on the shoulders of so many people that came before him.
That wasn't that many years ago, and yet this is dramatic. I mean, Barack Obama is the head of the Democratic Party right now.
Yeah, he's definitely the de facto head of the Democratic Party, and a lot of us even have to face the reality that he has empowered Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who so many people are frustrated with, and he can make huge changes with the DNC if he wanted to. I think what a lot of us, so I still support President Obama. I still love him and respect him. I'm not nearly as strong in my critique of him as like someone like Cornel West would be. But I am frustrated, not just with him, but with the reality that to be a Democrat in America requires you to compromise on so much that you care about. And I feel like he has done the best that he could in that process. But here's an illustrative point. When he came into office, he enacted a lot of policies banning the influence of lobbyists, not only in his administration, but in the DNC.
Let's just take a moment and actually listen to him saying that. This June of 2008, he was the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, and he said the DNC would not take money from lobbyists.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest PACs. We're going to change how Washington works. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House, and they will not drown out the voices of the American people when I'm president of the United States of America.
So what happened then?
It's huge to me.
Yeah.
And when I hear that clip, I don't believe he's selling wolf tickets. I don't believe he's lying to us. He meant it. And when he came into the White House, he put in some really strict policies about the influence from lobbyists. And at least in the White House, he's tried to keep to some of those things. But the DNC, and anybody that's listening to this could Google it, the DNC, piece by piece, has taken away all of the policies and restrictions that he put on lobbyists. And the DNC, they now take huge amounts of money from special interest and lobbyists. So even the things that he put in place, the DNC has rolled those back. And for me, that's telling about the future of the party. And Hillary Clinton, I don't even think she would be winning right now had she not taken money from super PACs and lobbyists. She would be so far behind in the fundraising game that it would have crippled her campaign. And for those of us who see that as an essential issue, that money does influence politicians, for us it's a bit of a deal breaker. And the DNC is going in the wrong direction with that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is New York Daily News senior justice writer Sean King. And we would love to hear from you. And we wonder if one of the two major political parties, or maybe the Libertarian or Green Party, actually accurately or closely represents your own ideas and beliefs. You can tweet us now at OST Talk. So the question for me is that, and let me play you a comment from the former U.S. Labor Secretary Robert Reich. He served in the Clinton administration. He says that what we're seeing right now is sort of a sea change in the Democratic Party. Here he is speaking with radio host Tom Hartman.
we've got to pay more attention to this upsurge around the country of people who feel, not only feel that the game is rigged and know the game is rigged, but also feel that they don't have an opportunity to get ahead. Their children have even less of an opportunity. People who have less job security than they've ever had in living memory. And people, average typical families of this country who are actually worse off than they were in the year 2000. If we want to win elections as Democrats, we have got to change our tune.
Because it sounds like he's talking about you and your mother, and I wonder if there isn't actually an opportunity here, especially with the rise of the Bernie Sanders campaign. Perhaps Bernie is a crucible for change, and this is a moment when it might be an opportunity to really bring about substantive change in the DNC.
Listen, I still hold, and I still hope that happens. Like, I have no idea what the next 2 months are going to hold. Like, I don't know if Bernie wins California, say he wins it by a point or say he wins it by 5 points, what impact will that have? Or will the DNC move forward as it feels like they're doing now and with kind of a disrespectful tone and slight towards the Sanders campaign? I don't think anybody would argue the Democratic establishment is kind of firmly against Bernie Sanders. Almost no governor, no senator, no congresspeople, you know, They're completely against him. Even almost every mayor of every major city has endorsed Hillary Clinton. And so my skepticism leads me to believe that the next 2 months are going to be a big disappointment. But even in part of my announcement was to say, after this election, I am moving on and considering other options. But my gut tells me that these next few months are going to be a deep disappointment to those of us who support Bernie and the things that we care about most, including Bernie himself, are going to continue to be slighted by the party.
You know, I mean, I read a lot of your writing, and I know that you don't very often prognosticate. You don't often make predictions about the future. But I wonder what you think about the moment where we are right now. This very conversation that we're having about the identity of the Democratic Party is one that many Republicans are having with the rise of Trump. Could this be a moment in which we do get some viable third parties, in which we see other major parties rise?
Well, I think every poll and, you know, every bit of research tells us that people now are more open to voting for a third party candidate than they ever have been in the modern history of this country. And that's on the Republican side and the Democratic side. But people are really nervous about taking that step. Like, all of us, probably including you and I and people listening, in a sense, we're kind of addicted to the Democratic and Republican parties. It's what we know. It's what we've always done. Yet every poll shows that both of these candidates are the two most disliked candidates to ever get to this point. And so I think people are begging, basically, for another option. And if we were ever going to do a serious new third or fourth party, like, I wish we had a four-party system where Republicans felt like they had two options and Democrats felt like they had two options, where there was a more progressive Democratic option and a more moderate Democratic option, and the same thing for Republicans. I think that would be a fair fight. Like, I think right now, Democrats and Republicans, those of us who are disaffected and frustrated, are playing a bit of a game of chicken. Like, I think if Republicans believed that they were going to start a credible third party on their own, they're going to hold back, because they feel like, hey, if we start this, we're going to ruin it for any other Republican candidate. And the Democrats are doing the same thing, where they're afraid to start a credible third party because they think, hey, that means giving the campaign to Trump. But if the Republicans, if disaffected Republicans and Democrats each started their own credible third party and we had a credible four-party system, I think we'd have a lot more balance there.
So I want to read a couple things people have tweeted to you in the two or three minutes we have left.
Sure.
Reliable Friends tweets, Sean King assessment may be correct, not his conclusion. He should strive to correct the party's foible from inside. And Nikki Salcedo says, with that rationale, I couldn't watch movies or enjoy sports or buy clothes or eat at any restaurant.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
It's because we said that you can't separate the candidate's politics from her husband's in the 1990s and how you get politics out. What do you think? I mean, that especially to this comment that you should be striving to correct the party's foibles from inside it.
Well, I think somebody should be doing that. I think I support the notion that we need great people inside of party politics fighting to change it. But I also love the notion that there are people outside of the party. I think Robert Reich is someone that I admire a great deal, is probably a great example of that, is somebody who spent his entire life really inside of the Democratic Party establishment, who has now kind of made a slight pivot and has positioned himself outside of the party. And it was really even when I read a piece from him saying, listen, if Bernie loses, I still want you to fight for Bernie all the way to the end. This was what Robert Reich said.
Yeah.
But if he loses, I would prefer for you to vote for Hillary because we have to defeat Trump. But if Hillary wins, you should seriously consider starting a third party to fight back not only against her but against the Democratic Party. And so,
is that your plan?
Yeah, that's my thought. You know, I don't see a way. Like, I won't campaign for Hillary Clinton. I am one of those voters who is really here to fight more against Donald Trump, particularly if Bernie. It would take a miracle for Bernie to win at this point. It would take some type of revolution or something to happen.
Yeah.
A coup for him to win at this point. But I won't actively be supporting Hillary Clinton, but I'll do everything that I can to defeat Donald Trump. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
That is New York Daily News columnist Sean King. Thank you so much.
Thank you.